This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net.
911, what are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was? Was it a person or an animal? Or
I can't tell. All I know is that my sensor light came on, and I just happened to glimpse and see this thing running across the yard. A good-sized man or something that looks like a man. I don't know what it was. Just that it ran across the yard. Whatever it is, it's running. I couldn't catch it if I was going to chase it. Jesus Christ, you better...
Sure.
See ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Is he in your yard, sir?
Yeah, God, he's big.
Okay, what's he doing in your yard?
He's looking at me.
Okay. And the guy is on foot?
It's a big, real big person, that's all I can say.
Okay, but it is a person.
Yeah, I'd say it was a person, somebody really big, but he's all in black.
Is he a black male or a white male? Did you actually see whether, or was he just wearing black?
He's all black and he's big. He is big.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. This is Strange Harbor.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unwelcome, and the unbuttoned.
And as unwelcoming and unbuttoning as we may sound, did that make sense?
I guess. I don't know.
I'm still recuperating from the Sasquatch Summit.
How was the summit?
Oh, my gosh. It was packed. And it was a great time. Now, I went to pick up the She-Squatchers at SeaTac as they flew in from Minnesota. On the way up there, it got like really foggy.
Oh, yeah.
In the Black Hills, especially. And I, for a minute there, I was concerned because I couldn't see like 2 feet in front of me. But I was able to, you know, pick them up and get them to their hotel and... I think they had a blast. I think they had a good time. I think they're glad they came in. A lot of people...
This was their first time coming to the summit, wasn't it?
Right, yeah. Yes, yes.
That's awesome.
And, they had a good time, and then I took them back, and it was like... I was sad to see them go, because they're just so friendly, and they're funny, and they joke around, and they don't take things too serious.
Yeah.
And just people were having a good time. And they were meeting a lot of the other presenters for the first time. Now, they've met Bob Gimlin before, but this time they got to actually spend more time, because I like to give the speakers more flexibility, not like, you have to do this and you have to be scheduled to do this. It's like, okay, this is what we got. We'd like you to, you know, kind of hang out in your booth for people to meet you, but you're not required to. We're not going to say, hey, you left for an hour. You know, we want you to be comfortable. So, you know, do what you think you need to do. But these guests are coming to see you, so hopefully you're going to be available.
Sure.
But they got to spend more time with Bob and his handler, and they had a lot of like jokey kind of things. Like the girls would take like selfies with their big banner and just, hey, we're at the Sasquatch Summit. And then like Russell Accord, who's with the new Bigfoot TV show, he like raced and photobombed them.
Yeah.
And then they kind of went into this mock interview. How long have you been a She-Squatcher? And he's like, I've identified as a She-Squatcher for the past 3 minutes. And it was just fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody had a good time, I think. And then we had sold out. For the first time, the workshops like sold out. Now, we've sold workshops in the past on Sunday.
Yeah.
We'd never like went to full capacity with them, and we did, and it was just really exciting. And
I saw lots of good comments on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't use Facebook because it's toxic, so those toxic good comments I can just live without. Okay. No, but there were some good comments, huh?
Yeah.
Were there any bad comments?
I didn't see any bad ones.
Okay, because, everything
I saw was good.
I wouldn't hear any bad.
Well.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like maybe ways to improve. if, you know, if that's
too many
possible.
People.
Right. And there were a lot. And, you know, the staff at Quinault Beach, they were just like, whoa, there's a lot of people here. And, you know, we generally get a lot of people.
Yeah.
This was especially a lot of people. I just hope people had a good time, and I hope that they're glad that they came.
Well, all the comments that I saw were very positive, and
okay,
people
good.
Were saying they had a great time, and we're looking forward to going again next year.
Yay. You know, people have asked, well, did you find a Bigfoot? Did you find Bigfoot? Is Bigfoot going to be there? Did you find him? We know where Bigfoots are, right?
Yes.
Now, they're really good at being evasive. They know how to stay away from us because they've been doing this for eons. They'll be seen when they want to let you see them.
Yes.
And there are occasions where they are caught by surprise, but it's very rare. And it's usually by someone who doesn't believe in Bigfoot, doesn't care about Bigfoot. We call ourselves researchers, but according to Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum, he kind of labels us citizen scientists. And
yes.
I think that's a little more accurate. Citizen scientists, because we have no degrees. Some of us do. Like, we have, like, PhDs and wildlife biologists and things like that, like
sure.
in the Olympic Project, for example, that are accredited people. You know, most of us are just...
But you can, if you can learn how to gather information, you can be a researcher. You don't need a college degree to be a researcher. It helps because you learn research methods when you go to college.
Mm-hmm.
But... you can learn those same methods without going to college. And once you learn those methods and you follow them closely, then the information that you gather is pretty accurate. And then you are a scientist. You are
a citizen
a
scientist.
Citizen scientist. You know, there's nothing that says the average person can't go out and collect data.
Right. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Derek... Randalls, who is the founder or the co-founder of the Olympic Project, he you know, went up on stage and kind of explained, you know, we're just simply collecting data because when, you know, science eventually does become more interested in this phenomenon and, you know, let's say someone does bring in a body or, you know, somehow confirms the existence better, we'll have the like cleanest, purest data collected that might be useful to them, whether it's moon phases during sightings or
sure.
elevation or time of day or just whatever.
Yeah.
The data that's collected is so precise, or at least we try to get as precise data as we can and segmented down to, you know, like I said, moon phases.
Whenever the time comes that we kind of open our arms to Bigfoot.
For a big hug?
For a big hug. Having that data and having accurate and valid data that can be used in research is vitally important. You know, through years and years and years, people had collected medical data on different illnesses.
Right.
And that's how eventually, when the technology advanced, they were able to go back and began to solve the problem of eradicating these diseases
mm-hmm.
because they were able to accurately identify what the disease was, what caused it, and then identify a cure.
Oh, and thank God for penicillin, right? Hey, there might be some, right? Some in this thing. There might not be, though.
There is.
Oh, okay. No, nothing of importance. Just stockings for soldiers is all. Now a soldier's going to get a stocking, coffee-stained coffee. Stocking. But that'll make it more authentic, you know? You're in Afghanistan right now. Take a smell of this nice coffee here that you probably don't have over there, right? No, no worries, really.
And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, I just spilled my coffee all over the desk and all over our Winterfest poster. And,
yep.
It's...
toxic
white
male.
If I don't spill something, then there's a problem. So my wife says, she always knows when dinner is good because it's all over the front of me.
Ooh. So what have you been doing?
Trying to take care of my health.
Yeah.
celebrating my birthday.
Yeah, and, happy birthday.
Thank you. And the big 7-0.
Wow. You don't look a day older than 69.
I know. I'm a spring chicken yet.
Yep. You're just a youngin'.
So, but life
70
goes on.
Is the new 30.
That's right. And dad is the same old dad, so.
Right.
But,
so we're working on the UFO summit. That's next.
The UFO summit is coming up.
Right.
And basically it's growing to be as big as the Sasquatch summit.
Right. Right.
And people are coming from all over the country to share their ideas.
Right.
And their thoughts and their research about UFOs.
So this whole disclosure thing is well, kind of big. More government officials are going on record with what they know about UFOs or life from other planets visiting this planet. And so we're going to hopefully be bringing some of those people in, that some of those government officials.
Yeah. Sometimes when you're doing internet research, which is probably the worst thing you could do.
Right.
But it's hard to know whether or not some of the articles are valid. And you know, even if it sounds good, you know, if they quote some, you know, some study or something, you just aren't sure. But when you have people come and talk to you in person, it's easier to tell how, you know, how valid the information is. When you see somebody stand up on a stage and they talk to you in plain terms about what they've seen, what they've experienced, what they know, what research they've done, you get a better handle on what's going on out there, what this UFO phenomenon is all about. And it's hardly a new thing. I mean, we've been spotting UFOs for, you know, hundreds of years. But we now have the technology to share that information worldwide in a matter of moments, actually. Whereas in the past, you know, 100 years ago, if you saw a UFO and you told a local newspaper reporter,
they would call you crazy.
They would call you crazy. Unless they were from the National Enquirer.
Right.
But no, they were. There just wasn't the proliferation of information spread throughout the country and throughout the world that there is today. I mean, if somebody sees a UFO in Southern California, somebody in South Africa knows about it within 24 hours. News gets around quickly. So we're advancing. We're sharing more. But there's also more BS out there. Mm. So we have to sort through some of the fakes. And we've talked about this on other shows. Some of the fake people, the fake stories and stuff. But there's real stories out there. And we just need to go get them and validate our sources and look at how people validate their stories. And some just have a story. But one of the things that I usually kind of look at when I'm trying to judge the validity of someone's story is, are they trying to get something personal from this story? In other words, are they looking for attention? Are they exaggerating? Does what they say seem authentic? Does it come from the heart? Are they speaking in normal language? Are they describing things in normal language? Are they asking you to take a leap of faith? Or are they just telling you the story? I mean, when I first started talking about my near-death experience, one of the reasons people listened is because I had no expectations of what people were to take from that.
Right.
I would just tell the story And basically the story was my gift. And when I see other people do the same, and I see that quite frequently, even in the Bigfoot and UFO communities, people sharing their stories openly, not having expectations. They're not looking to get rich or become famous or, you know, sell a dozen books or whatever. By the way, buy my book. No, but, you know, I spoke about my near-death experience for, I don't know, 15 years before I ever wrote a book about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of writing the book was just to be able to get to reach out to a wider group of people. You know, but if somebody's trying to sell you artifacts or, you know, glow-in-the-dark keychains or something, you know, they might, their story might be a sales pitch. And if it is, if it feels like they're trying to sell you on something, then maybe it's not true. So we have to, you know, there's no way to validate a person's personal experience unless there's some other evidence to back it up. So we have to listen carefully and try to personally authenticate what's being said. You know, and sometimes it sounds really good. I mean, I've been fooled by people before, for sure. Even in my work with the Veterans Administration, there were guys that were fake vets.
Really?
Yeah, they come in and they got a big story about how they were in combat and all that. But, of course, we could verify that information. And when we
That's just despicable.
When we ran the records, turned out they never even served in the military. So
yeah, that's just despicable.
It is. And there are despicable people out there. But that's why we have facts that we can fact check and we can look at what they say and whether or not we can validate what they say. You know, if you're saying, well, just believe me because I'm me, that's not good enough. You know, it's we need to validate that. There's lots of different ways to do it, too, though. Preponderance of evidence. If we have a large body of evidence, and if what you're saying matches that large body of evidence, then there's probably some validity to what you're saying. It doesn't guarantee the truth, but at least it puts it in a truthful ballpark. And truth is what we're looking for. Isn't that what they said on the X-Files? The truth is out there.
Yeah.
The truth is out there, but we got to go find it. And so we have to dig. We have to talk to experts. We have to talk to friends, relatives, anybody in the know. We got to think about the circumstances by which someone saw Bigfoot or a UFO, had a near-death experience, saw a ghost, or was in a haunted building, or, you know, any kind of experience. We've talked to people that have experienced a wide variety of paranormal beings, the dog men and the little people, and what were some of the others from that that group up north.
That group up north.
Or maybe they're down south. I don't know. They're somewhere, probably in the east, or maybe they're in the west.
It could be in the west.
But we've talked to a number of people that have had a variety of experiences, and sometimes we can't validate those experiences right away. We have to do a little research. But if what they're talking about is similar to, say, what someone else is talking about, and they haven't talked to that other person or haven't had a connection with that person, but they're saying the same things, then maybe there's some validity to that. When I first began talking about my near-death experience, I didn't even know what that term meant, near-death experience. I had never heard it until the first time I told my story. And it was it was a situation where I hadn't read books about it. I hadn't studied it. I knew almost nothing other than this incredible thing happened that has stuck with me years and years and years. I knew it wasn't a lucid dream. I knew it wasn't some strange psychological phenomenon. You know, it was a real event. And it wasn't until I spoke to many, many other people who had had similar events and had told similar stories that I began to realize just how valid this is, just how valid this experience is, and that it has meaning. You know, for Bigfoot researchers, discovering the existence or trying to prove the existence of Bigfoot without actually interfering in the life of Bigfoot. In other words, they don't, most of the researchers that I know, and probably Johnny too, they don't want to capture Bigfoot. They don't want to have some kind of social or government invasion of their lifestyle, right, or their lives. They just want to verify their existence. And same with UFO studies, you know. We don't want to necessarily, you know, go crawl in a spaceship with somebody. We just want to verify that it exists.
Right.
It gives us a sense of a greater understanding of the universe. If we understand more about Bigfoot, we understand more about our place on this earth, who we are as human beings, and that there are other beings or creatures that are possibly similar, maybe a different path of evolution, maybe a visitor from another dimension. We don't know what it is. We don't know for sure. But by trying to validate what's there, by seeking the truth, it gives us a greater understanding of what is and what's possible. So if we can validate that there are material spaceships coming from other planets, from other galaxies, maybe even from other dimensions, it gives us an understanding of who we are, our place in the universe, and what's possible, where we could be going. It gives us a kind of the ability to take one step beyond what we know and what is currently a valid thought, a valid concept. You have any comments on that, Johnny?
No, that sounds about right.
You're too easy. You're way too easy.
I try, man. I think we should take a break, take a breather, do some stretches, some jumping jacks.
I think that sounds like a good idea.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, Ghosts, UFOs, Aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
Well, it's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird and...
strange,
yeah,
and
strange,
the wonderful, and...
The not-so-wonderful.
Not-so-wonderful, and the people, and the animals, and the... flying saucers.
The She-Squatchers, who I'm very impressed with, they're the Midwest's first all-female Sasquatch group, and no, they're not a bunch of man-haters. They're they're man-lovers, but this was the deal. And, you know, we had talked to Jen Cruz, the founder on Strange Harbor in the past. You can find that episode on strangeharbor.net, that she had her own, I think it was a paranormal radio show, and a very well-respected Sasquatch researcher had mentioned that if someone could only start an all-female group, because Sasquatch seem to be more drawn to women, whether it's a sexual thing or just that they're less intimidated, because, you know, it's usually guys that are chasing after them with guns and stuff.
Well, yeah, and women are less aggressive and less violent and kind of... women vibrate at a different frequency than men.
Oh, boy, don't they?
And and that's not a negative thing. That's a positive thing.
Yeah, it's just life.
Yeah, it's women are more...
nurturing?
Nurturing. Not that men can't be.
Right.
But women are more... naturally, you know, we gotta watch out here.
Right. We're How dare you?
Stepping.
You toxic man. You're a toxic man. Men and women are the same.
We're stepping on dangerous territory here. But, you know, when I was in college, we studied matriarchal societies throughout history. And actually, the most successful societies in history were matriarchal societies, mm-hmm. which were societies that were run by women.
Mm-hmm.
And women have had great success in being politicians and running societies.
Give us an example.
The Mayans, the Incas, the Aztecs.
Where are they now?
Well, the Spanish came over and decided they didn't like this peaceful, loving group of people and decided to get rid of them. Brought their disease and their... Which is a problem, you know, when we start intermingling different cultures, is that sometimes different cultures have different diseases.
Right.
When I went over to Vietnam, we had to be vaccinated. For all you anti-vaxxers out there, we had to be vaccinated with just about every vaccine that exists today, and because there were all these diseases that we were susceptible to, that we weren't protected against, and some of them were deadly. So when you start intermingling societies and cultures and things, there are some dangers. But once you start doing it, and I think we have, at this stage of our development as human beings, we have intermingled the species. We have come together as one species. And we're starting to understand the difference between men and women.
What? There's no difference. They're the same.
No, they're not. They're very different.
Oh, you are a toxic male.
That's right. But there is a difference. There's a difference between men and women.
That's billy@strangeharbor.net.
So, go ahead. Send me your complaints. I'm willing to take them. But yes, men and women are different. That's not a bad thing, though. It's a good thing, because just like when we meet people from other cultures, we can learn.
Right.
We can learn from them. When we meet people from, you know, other parts of the world, and even other parts of the country, I spent 2 years traveling by car all over the United States doing lectures and promoting my book, and I got to meet just a wide variety of people throughout this country. And most of them were pretty decent, you know.
Most of them.
There were some that were not decent.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they were nice people. And but you got to see all the different cultures and all the different thought processes and all the different ways that we interrelate with one another. Probably my most memorable... I had two memorable experiences, and one was the biggest group that I spoke to, which, believe it or not, was in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hmm.
And the smallest group that I spoke to, again, believe it or not, was in New York City.
Wow.
So, in New York City, I only got 5 people to show up to my lecture.
Wow.
And, but they did take me out to dinner afterwards to this really nice deli that was I had a pastrami sandwich that was out of this world. But anyway, back to cultures and understanding why Bigfoot may respond better to women than men. And I think it is that women are less aggressive.
Right.
That women are, again, it's a like a vibratory thing. And I think that Bigfoot responds to how do I describe it? That vibration that we give off, that aura, our frequency that we operate on in the universe. You know, if you think about people as being radio stations, there's a million radio stations in this country, and I think there's a million, probably, I'm guessing.
Right.
I haven't counted them. But all of them operate on a different frequency. But yet they're all people talking, playing music, you know, doing different things. And yet they all broadcast on a different frequency. And I think people are the same way. I think we all kind of have a little bit different frequency. We're close, but not exactly the same. And I think with women, that difference in frequency is probably what Bigfoot senses, less threatening, less
right.
aggressive.
This individual here doesn't seem like a jerk. So
are you saying men are jerks?
Most of us are, yeah. I'm a guy, so I can say that.
Okay.
Most of us are.
I'm still hesitant to say that. But.
Whether we intend to be or not, and it could, you know, we're getting old.
I understand what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
We can be jerks at times.
Right.
And we can be
pigs.
Insensitive.
And, right.
Aggressive.
But I think that has to do with just our species and just our placement in nature.
Yeah. I mean, men can learn to be different. Men can be more sensitive.
But
less aggressive.
Can a male bear? Learn to be sensitive.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Male bears are when treated with kindness and love are often
you've not met many male bears, have you?
Back. Well, most of them have not been treated with kindness and love.
Well, so, yeah, they run off.
Yeah.
They're run out of there.
But they get out. They sense our aggression and they get out. But
no, I'm talking about the aggression of the female bear.
Of the female bear.
They're like, get out of here.
Yeah, well, you know, they're protecting their family. But, I mean, that's what makes human beings different from animals, is that we have a greater sense of adaptability and reason. So we have the ability to think, to change, to grow.
Wait,
to
think?
Integrate knowledge.
Nobody said anything about no thinking.
Well, I know. It's hard. It's thinking. The thinking part is really hard.
Ouch.
So there's so many that don't do that anymore. And,
yeah, that's true.
We have to stop and think. We have to stop and understand where we are in the universe, where we are on this planet, where we are in reality, where we are in relationship to everything else that's on this planet. We seem to think that we rule this planet, that we are the great ones, we are the ones with the houses and the cars, and yet it's the bears and the Bigfoots and the deer and all the animals that live in the elements. If we had to live in the same elements, we would survive maybe one or two nights.
Right.
That's about it. We wouldn't be able to forage for food.
Oh, and I was talking about the She-Squatchers. They have on their YouTube channel these weird lights that kind of just suddenly appear when they're out doing Bigfoot stuff. Suddenly these weird, strange lights appear. And, you know, they're in deep, dark forests and swamps in Minnesota that aren't really near anything. You know, it's not like it could be the Air Force or someone's hobby drone, because there's no houses nearby, or and the swampy areas, they're discouraged from going in some of the areas that they go because they could die. They could, you know, fall in a swamp and that's it. So I thought that was strange, more of the lights appearing in Sasquatch kind of territory. What are these lights? Where do they come from? Are they UFOs?
You know, and we've heard those kind of stories more than once.
Right.
Which gives you a sense that there's something there. It doesn't mean there's an absolute connection there, but it's worth looking at that connection.
Yeah, asking the question.
Asking the question.
Right.
You know, trying to seek the truth. The truth is out there.
Most people just laugh. Ha, 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 you're crazy.
Yeah.
There's some speculation that these UFOs and aliens and whatnot are actually our artificial intelligence that we created. It's the artificial intelligence we create now, but in the future, coming back to monitor us to make sure we create
Don't
it.
Don't do stupid things.
Well, no, it's making sure we create it.
And what would happen if that artificial intelligence from the future found out that we never created it?
It would want to make sure it gets created. Maybe it like Terminator, you know, like the Terminator movies?
Yeah, yeah.
How they send a Terminator back to kill John Connor, who leads the resistance that eventually destroys them. They want to come back and destroy him so he's never born, so they don't get destroyed. Like a self-preservation thing. So maybe this artificial intelligence is initiating its own self-preservation to make sure, okay, let's make sure these dumb humans keep developing this artificial intelligence, because we're going to take over. Are you now dumber? Now that I said that?
No, but that makes sense. I mean, you know, we're future thinking here, which is... You know, which is pure speculation.
And yes,
but,
and that's what the UFOs are, and the
again,
aliens are.
We're starting to know something about artificial intelligence, and we're starting to know something about.
What do you mean, know something? Aren't we creating it?
Well,
we should know something about it.
We are. when I say we know something, that it's becoming more commonly known.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's like. Like the microwave oven. If I told you the microwave oven first hit the market in the mid-1950s,
mm-hmm.
you'd probably tell me I was full of BS. Well, because it didn't become popular
right.
until the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
A man radar range actually was made available in the 50s, but it didn't catch on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing with knowledge. I mean, there are people that are working every day on artificial intelligence. There are people that have developed it, that are making it function, that have created robots, that have created thinking machines. It's not widely known yet,
mm-hmm.
And it's not widely understood. And first, it has to be known, and then it can be understood. So we're in a process of evolution. We are evolving this artificial intelligence. Are we going to use this technology for the betterment of our species or for the detriment of our species?
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. If I could use artificial intelligence, if I could create a medical diagnostic center with artificially intelligent machines that examine us and send that information that they gather to a central point where it can be analyzed, wouldn't that be a great thing? You know, I live in Ocean Shores. There's like nothing out there for medical
people.
Care. Yeah, and it's all old retired people mostly. Although we're getting more young families in there. But the majority are older retired people. Therefore, they are people with more medical problems, and yet we don't have much in the way of medical care.
Mm-hmm.
But I was talking to someone last night who is looking at creating a rather large medical facility. They have the money, and they have the land, and they have everything they need to do it. They, if they can do this, if they could utilize modern technology to create this out in Ocean Shores, I mean, this would be a game changer for all those old people that are having to drive to Aberdeen or Hoquiam or even Olympia, like I have to do,
mm-hmm.
To get medical tests. I had to go in yesterday and get an echocardiogram, which isn't, it's not an invasive test. It's basically the same kind of thing they do to do ultrasounds on pregnant women to find out what your baby looks like.
What does your baby look like?
Mine looks like a beating heart.
Oh.
So they do this in your heart, and your, you know, they look at your all your veins and everything that go in and out of your heart. But if I could have, say, gone to a clinic in Ocean Shores where they could administer this test and then send the information to my doctor,
right,
that would have been much easier than me having to drive 4 hours round trip for a 20-minute procedure. We have to use this technology that we have to improve our lives. And yes, it will take away jobs, but it will also create jobs. It will create more data that has to be analyzed. At some point, I mean, people have to be involved in this process. It can't be a machine's only process. And again, this is entirely dependent on how we use the technology. If we use the technology for our betterment, we use it to create new jobs and new skills, new skill sets that need to be learned. It will, you know, advance our education, our knowledge, our skill, and create jobs at the same time. People will look at work and making a living in a very different way if we have machines and artificial intelligence. It will make, I think it can have the biggest impact in the medical field. It probably will have a big impact in the manufacturing industry. Companies like Nissan and Toyota have been building cars with robots for 20 years, 30 years. You know, even American cars utilize robots to manufacture the cars. Not entirely. We still employ a lot of people. But the point I'm getting at here is that it's how we put it to use for ourselves, how we make it benefit us, rather than deterring from our growth as human beings.
Even your buddy Elon Musk says we better be careful.
Yes, we have to be very careful with artificial intelligence.
Right. Otherwise, we could be slaves to the robots.
We could.
You know.
And
protein sacks. What was that movie? What was that? The Matrix.
The Matrix.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, that's make-believe. But we can certainly become that, because we can become anything that we put our minds to. In the 60s, the high tech was Star Trek.
Right.
I mean, this was like out-of-the-world high-tech stuff. We didn't even have automatic opening doors, you know.
Right.
At that time, you had to push the door with your hand to open it.
Wired remote controls.
We had none of that. Yeah, we had wired remote control, and even that was high tech.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, and when we watched Star Trek and we saw all this amazing wireless technology and doors that open when you stepped in front of them and all this stuff, and we thought, wow, how far out is that? And today, if you watch those early Star Trek films and the early Star Trek TV shows, you'll see how rudimentary that technology is.
Right.
I mean, it's darn near caveman.
Someday we may have laser swords.
Yeah, we may.
You know?
Actually, I think that we probably have something similar to that right now.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's interesting because I read a lot of books, and I try to read 50 books a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to try to read more than that, but I don't get through that many books anymore. I'm old and slow, and takes me longer to read a book, but I learn a lot of good things. And one thing that I learn when I read sci-fi books and thrillers and stuff, I learn about new technology. And usually the author will tell you about the technology that they talked about in their book. In the end of the book, they'll tell you how they developed that character or how they got information about that technology and how it would work. And so what I'm finding is a lot of books that are written talk about odd technology like solar technology for spacecraft that can take us from the Earth to Jupiter in 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
This technology exists. It exists today. But we have to learn how to make that technology work to our advantage. It's there. The technology is there. We got to make it work. Technically, everything that we have today has always been here, even cell phones. And I'll explain that because that's an odd concept. Very quickly, because we're running out of time. But everything is made from molecules.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so your cell phone is nothing but a collection of molecules assembled in a certain way to create your cell phone. The components of your phone are atoms and molecules that are put together to make each component, which, when connected to another component, makes something else. They create elements that are used in the construction of all these little bits and pieces. So all those elements, all the basic elements that make up your cell phone, have been here for hundreds and hundreds of years. We just not have not assembled them in the same way. And in the future, we will find new ways to assemble all these elements and the elephants.
And the elephants.
Still early in the morning for me. But this is what we have to do. We have to understand that everything comes from something, and all the components are there. We just got to figure out how to put them together.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you want to listen to back episodes or contact Bill and yell at him for his new age TUI, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.